welcome to Tabletop Game Talk On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all times. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about generic themes in board games, generic fantasy, generic sci-fi, zombies, Cthulhu, and trading in the Mediterranean have all gotten a bad rap for not being creative and or being overused. But we're going to take a closer look.
But as first, as always, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, the SGC, and thank you to all our other patrons as well.
I was just thinking as I was reading that intro, ooh, this is a lot of teas and talks and topics and game talk, tabletop. This is, you know, it's a bit of a tongue twister.
Isn't it?
Like, and then I messed up.
Yeah, isn't it like reiteration? That's the whole point.
I don't know. It's something. I can do that.
And you have, this is new.
I think alliteration was what you were
alliteration.
Looking for.
Alliteration?
Yes.
That is exactly what I was going for. That's why I keep you around to correct my faux pas talk wordy things in real time.
Yep.
Okay, so we are here to talk about themes, specifically those generic themes.
Yes, and does non-themes come into this, I'm wondering? Sort of like, you know, where they just almost don't have a theme?
No, because that's abstracts.
Okay, so that's his own thing.
Yeah.
We're not counting that as its theme on its own, like the non-theme theme?
No. We're talking about generic fantasy. You can talk fantasy as a theme. Like, oh, that's a fantasy game.
Yeah.
Typically, though, people will say generic fantasy. Okay. Or they'll say a space game, or they'll say, like, generic space or something like that.
Whereas the opposite of a generic fantasy would be Game of the Thrones, you know, fantasy.
That would be definitely a licensed theme type of thing. But Game of Thrones has almost become its own generic theme.
Right.
So sometimes you can over-theme things. Like Star Wars. Right. There's so many Star Wars games out there. Right. It's like, oh, that's just another Star Wars game.
Yeah.
So I don't think that we can actually, like, eliminate those from the conversation.
Okay.
The reason I, like, thought about this topic as something I wanted to talk about because I hear this term generic fantasy all the time and it's always derogatory.
Right.
And that frustrates me because I actually really like generic fantasy. It's you can't tell by looking at my game shelf, but
well, you can. That's what Chris
you also
is
like
sarcastic.
Generic space.
Generic space I don't like as much though. I'm much more likely to go to a generic fantasy than a generic space.
True.
Because they have this, like, the fantasy aesthetic that they use, like the scroll backgrounds and things like that.
I think it's the art style.
The art style.
I wonder if it's a familiarity.
It could be. There's a lot that has generic fantasy and generic space have in common.
Yes.
And then there's a lot that, well, not a lot that's different, but for me, generic space has this, it's like this overly futuristic attempt at, like, iconography and stuff.
I feel like sometimes it's, how can we play on the familiarity of Star Trek and Star Wars without getting sued?
Sometimes. Like, the captain is dead. If you look at that game, you're like, oh, this is just a stylized Star Trek game. Except, nowhere are we going to say Star Trek or have any kind of Star Trek emblem. But there is definitely a pocket logo and red, blue, and yellow shirts all over the place.
Yeah.
So, but something like The Captain is Dead, I don't think would be considered generic space. It is more knockoff Star Trek, right?
But can Star Trek be a generic of its own?
I think it can. I think what happens is you get to a certain point where people start talking about a theme as a category of game. So if you start saying something like, that's a Star Trek game, or that's a Star Wars game, or something like that, I think that's when you start getting into that territory of generic, even though it's a licensed generic.
Fair enough.
So all of that
I think we've covered definition.
Yeah, all of that is just to set the stage for the conversation, though. Because, like I say, the thing that really gets me is that we use these terms derogatorily in a lot of cases. You know, we just recently talked about Euro games and Amerithrash games and things like that, which can be used in a derogatory way if those aren't your thing. But I think more than anything, generic themes become really, like, people just, like, adamantly, like, I don't want to, nothing horror. If it's horror, I'm not interested in it.
And the reverse.
Like, if
it's horror, I'll play it. Yeah. Whatever it is. Right. I don't care.
Right. So, like, every Cthulhu game, I'm going to buy it. And I think that that's an interesting thing to examine as to, like, what are those triggers? Like, what makes this, like, a bad thing? You guys have any kind of, like, overall, the beginning of the episode, before I convince you of anything, what is your feeling on, like, generic fantasy, for example?
Well, I mean, I like fantasy. I grew up, you know, reading fantasy and sci-fi books. So I think a lot of people have those early memories of getting into this sort of, you know, in the world of sort of literature and fantasy, like fantasy is a big genre. And I think so there's lots of memories involved there. And there's lots of things in popular culture that you can point to. Lord of the Rings, obviously, now Game of Thrones in the modern era, and many more. So for me, lots of fun memories, like it. But also, I'm a little, like, discerning. Like, I feel like the art has to be really good on top of just having that theme.
So you're fine with generic fantasy as long as the art lives up to
yes.
your expectations of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think it, to me, can be sort of a turnoff. I really enjoy high fantasy, which a lot of what Josh just listed, to me, falls into a high fantasy category, whereas what a lot of the generic fantasy games play on to me is the, like, kind of dime store novel, like, kind of an 80s D&D. Like, the illustration style is very distinct in a game that I'm just like, a lot of things that I've played that have this kind of theme, I feel like it's just an art style that people are like, oh, this exists, I can take it and use it, and then I don't have to put very much thought into my style or art. And it often kind of plays into, like, the rules of the game too. Is like, I didn't put as much thought into this as I could have.
Well, I also, I mean, you mentioned 80s D&D art style. I would say that most games are not that. That, if you go 80s D&D, you're almost going, like, 8-bit art style, which is their own art styles for certain.
And maybe it's, like,
it's more, like, modern D&D art style.
No, like, I feel like it's, like, maybe, like, 3.5. But, okay. Like, the art style of D&D 3.5.
Okay.
Because I think 5th Ed kind of changed the art style, so that to me is different.
Well, 4th and 5th have a very similar, and now we're talking D&D, but that really does come in, because when you talk about generic fantasy, a lot of people will equate that to D&D. Like, D&D yes. is generic fantasy.
Well, also, there's an offshoot here that I think overlaps, which is generic medieval setting. Because, you know, you add in the supernatural with fantasy, but, like, you know, often they're set in the same time period.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're right. So if you're, say you're not doing fantasy per se, you're doing medieval.
Right.
And medieval is also another generic theme that you can slap on something.
Yeah, like a Lancelot, Knights of the Round Table kind of game.
You don't even need to be that specific.
Right.
Knights and castles and peasants and, you know, those type of things. Kings, queens, like that medieval, like, seed of games is used all over the place.
Right.
We talked last week about Castles of Burgundy. I mean, in my mind, I'm just thinking, you know, 19 or 1500s Europe, right?
Yeah.
I think that's around the time of medieval times.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Well, you know, I just pull things out and see if they stick. Kitty is comparing art styles right now.
I've fallen down a Google hole. Sorry.
Well, but I think the art style is one thing. But when you're talking about generic fantasy, another real big trope of that is elves, dwarves, some kind of dragon. Half something. Usually some kind of fantasy dragons, orcs, goblins.
Yes.
And humans, right? Humans are there. And humans are that generic kind of really...
Almost always warrior.
Yeah.
Human warrior.
Sure. But the human is like the overwhelming population of the world. And then there's these pockets of other races that have... extraordinary differences, right?
Right.
I feel like it's all kind of... It stems from Tolkien, a lot of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, also in D&D, like, comes from that. You know, like, it's the... You've got your party members. You have your different classes. You have warriors and clerics to rogues. Those all play into it as well. And then you have kind of the... like, wealthy versus peasant is another.
Yeah, royalty, you know, that type of thing. So, like, when classes are actually a pretty good one, too. Again, it sort of equates back to D&D. Dungeons and Dragons, if I'm saying that.
I think we threw it out there. I don't know.
But, you know, you have, so you're five basic classes now, and it's turned into five. It used to be four. It used to be fighter, mage, cleric, and thief. But now we throw in ranger as another, like a fifth thing in there. Obviously, if you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, there's a lot more nuance to all these classes. But when you're talking generic, it's typically picking from those five classes and from the five races, which are the humans, elves, dwarves, halflings, and I guess only four races because I can't think of the other one. I would say like some kind of half orc or some kind of beastmen type race can easily be put in there. So what's wrong with this? Why is it bad to have this theme on top of probably hundreds of games every year?
I think it gets to Kitty's point before where it can be often be lazy. You know, it's a shortcut to slap a theme on top of your game mechanic, and it can save you a lot of time, but then it might lead you to kind of not take the time and to really do justice to the art or to really, you know, work the theme into the mechanics of the game. So yeah, that can often be the case.
Well, I don't think art is the issue because a lot of generic fantasy art is just amazing these days.
Like, says Chris Steele.
No, I mean, you can pick any game that's like someone says generic fantasy and take a look at the art. If you like fantasy art,
it's a style thing too sometimes. Yeah. But I do think it can be a... So a lot of... I think sometimes designers think game first, theme second. Sure. So you think mechanics, you think... what you're going to make on the table, and then you think how it's going to look on the table. And it's very easy to grab these already made things. It's like a template, sort of. Oh, I'm thinking of, and if you play a lot of games with this kind of theme, you're really familiar with it, and you're just kind of like, oh, I'm going to add my twist to this. So I think sometimes it can be a lazy designer's way of just like, oh, well, you know, like, oh, I played this game and it's going to be really similar to that game, but I put my own little thing into it. And so there's a lot of very similar games. There's a lot to, like, there's kind of a lot of chaff to wade through to get to the good stuff.
Okay. But I'm still wondering, is that bad? So, because when we look at like game mechanics, if we're looking at, you know, we've just, again, just because we've recently talked about it, you look at Euro games, which are, you know, you're trying to get victory points and you're trading, maybe you're trading cubes for cubes or doing something like that. Now, there are many people who say that that's overdone as well. Trading in the Mediterranean is one of these generic themes where you're trading one resource for another and maybe you're getting gold and you want to build up your kingdom or whatever you might be doing. We see a lot of games that are variants on that. And we start from something that we know. So when I put out another game, you have a basis, a foundation to go off. It's like, oh, this is like viticulture. Well, viticulture would be like something else, but this is like viticulture. So I'm going to understand this. And now I know how to play Power Grid because I get the idea. It's worker placement and resource management. We give that a little bit more leeway, I think, than just, oh, this is just another fantasy game. I'm not even going to look at what the gameplay is. I know it's generic fantasy, so, and I don't like generic fantasy.
I think sometimes it can be a numbers game. Like, even if, yeah, like, sure, there's just so many of them. There's so many that come out every year. It's easy to just say, like, I'm not going to waste my time on this because if, you know, sure, 100 games came out this year with this theme, and yeah, five of them are great. I have to wade through 95 games to find them, maybe. Whereas with themes that, you know, somebody put a lot more effort maybe into coming up with the theme. And sure, maybe somebody who is using this generic fantasy theme has put tons and tons of time into their rules. They've really thought about it. This is their baby. They've loved it and created this game. But also this could be a company, we just need to put out so many games. We want to put stuff on shelves. We want to get into hands. We don't care if they come back to us again. We don't care if people play this over and over. We just want to make money. And you don't know which one you're encountering because the theme doesn't give you an idea.
All right, I'll give you that. So Ryan Lockett, one of your favorite designers, Near and Far, Above and Below. You know, there's a bunch of other ones. But Near and Far and Above and Below are interesting ones because they share the same world. They're very... The art style is his own. The races in there, he still has humans, but all of the other races tend to be relatively unique. They're not Tolkien races. Is that one of the things that draws you to those games, that unique fantasy theme? Or does it really matter that that unique fantasy theme is there? Could it be a generic fantasy theme, and would you like the game any more or less?
I think I would still enjoy the game because it's not the theme of a game that makes me enjoy the game. I think that my concerns, maybe, because I do like fantasy games.
Yeah.
It's my maybe unwillingness to purchase on site fantasy games is that I don't know based on the art.
So the generic theme is actually not giving you enough information as to whether or not you would like the game.
Yes. So Above and Below, I look at that game. It is cool looking. The box is neat. I'm going to be drawn to that box. I'm going to look at the art, and that is going to get me to open the rule book. And there's all these story elements, and there's this fun mechanic, and I'm drawn into it. Whereas I'm looking at the table of games, let's say. I'm at the Cool Stuff Inc. booth at Gen Con, and there's shelves and shelves of games. I have just walked past 20 of boxes with the same cover art style to get to the one that looks different.
Yeah.
And that's it. And I'm not saying it's necessarily good or bad. It's just not going to draw me into the game.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think there's a sort of burnout issue for me. I think it's kind of like, you know, I throughout my life, I've seen so many of this type of theme and game that I'm kind of like, oh, here we go again. And I'm definitely the kind of person that needs variety in life in general. So I'm like, okay, give me a unique twist on this. It can still be fantasy. For instance, that Dragoon game that you've got on your table here looks fantastic. And the art is so unique on its own, even though it's the same theme as fantasy. The way that the pieces are sort of made, and there's the color schemes and the art style is so unique that I haven't seen a fantasy game displayed in that manner, that I'm still drawn to it. And it turned out it wasn't the best game. I didn't think it was amazing. But that art and stuff still drew me in, despite the fantasy kind of burnout I normally have. Now, a game like, I think it was Lancelot that I saw at Gen Con, I was kind of like, oh, here's another medieval game with Lancelot and the round table. And I'm just like, I feel like I've heard it 100 times and I just wasn't interested for that reason.
Yeah. And I picked it up immediately. I was like, oh, this is my style. I like this. I haven't seen it. You know, like I can never see too many of these games.
Well, it's interesting to me. It's like, I'm not really into the King Arthur theme or the medieval theme at all, but right. I do like the fantasy theme.
Right.
You know, we talked about, you know, talk about Dragoon. I think the game is, you know, it's really bad.
Yeah.
There's a few elements of the game that just make it practically unplayable once you start getting into it. And you're like, okay, I just need this card. And then if I draw this card, I win. And if you draw this card, you win. And there are ways to fix it. But it is the centerpiece on my table because it looks so cool. Yeah. You know, it's like, well, I can make use of this. It's still an art piece that I'm going to put in a place where people can look at it.
Yeah.
One of the things that got me into thinking about this is, you guys are, well, Cassandra, you're not really against generic fantasy, but it doesn't give you any information.
Yes.
Josh, you probably wouldn't, you're not necessarily against it either, but you're not going to be, you know, seek it out. But something like Arcadia Quest is certainly fantasy,
yes,
but it is in no way generic fantasy.
No.
Does that game, when you look at the cover of that game, you pick it up, is that something that draws you in, or is it the gameplay that drew you into that?
It definitely was art to begin with. I think, you know, having that chibi style was, for me, I hadn't seen many board games go that route. So I was kind of like, ooh, this is a new twist on this. And as long as it's just different enough, you can use that fancy theme and twist it in such a way that it feels new, it feels fresh, it feels like variety. And Arcadia Quest certainly did that. But yeah, I think you've just got to distinguish yourself in some ways. I mean, often I think this is really down to the pressures of the industry and the fact that, you know, using a generic theme is a sort of tried and tested marketing thing. It's like, oh, we know our audience, and we know that these kind of people that play board games are really into like sci-fi and fantasy novels and that kind of theme. And so it's not as much of a risk for us to throw that theme on as it would to create a completely new thing that was very unique and has its own sort of unique genre. So I think that's part of what's playing into this is just, you know, it's hard to make money on board games and you don't want to take too many risks.
Yeah. Now, how much did the story of the campaigns of Arcadia Quest draw you in versus the art and modeling style of it?
For me, actually, it was more the gameplay. More the gameplay. I there was just something cool around running around with my character and, you know, it felt very quick and fast. But then I also had this feeling like I was leveling up the character in a quicker, easier way than I would with a sort of a round of D&D. So, the gameplay for me was what drew me in after the initial kind of artwork.
So, Kitty, you mentioned story on Above and Below and Near and Far. How much of the story versus the art style, like, and versus the gameplay? Like, you really like the story. Is that the number one thing you like about that game?
I like the way the story is part of the gameplay of that game. Because I think sometimes I don't like too many campaign style games that feel like they go on too long. I would rather be playing an RPG, like the opposite of Josh. But I like the kind of short story, choose your adventure element of a game. It felt unique. It felt like something I hadn't played before.
So what I find is interesting. So, and one of the reasons we do these topics and I pick them is because I want to explore how I think and feel. Because I don't, typically when I start, I don't know where these things are going.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
How many fantasy games of the generic fantasy theme do you think you gave away at Gen Con this year?
Well, that's the thing. Most.
Most of the games that you bought that had a generic fantasy theme this year, you got rid of.
Yep. But I have no defense to that. So there's one generic fantasy game that I really, really like, and that's Hero Realms.
I was just going to bring up Hero Realms.
I really, really like that. It is a quick, it's basically based on Star Realms. It's a very quick to play, easy deck building fantasy game. The art's fantastic. And the generic fantasy
like
theme.
Like a hand building.
No, it's deck building. It's full deck building.
Am I thinking of a different game than you are?
You might be. Oh, you're thinking Fantasy Realms.
Fantasy Realms.
Which is another generic fantasy game.
Which I like a lot.
Which I also like a lot.
Hero Realms I have not played.
Yep. Hero Realms you did play. That's the one where we played, like, you guys were ganging up on me and I was, like, the dragon and you had to...
Oh, yeah. We played it once a long time ago.
Yep. Which I still love that game. I played it solo. It's a deck building and when your deck starts out, you can choose your four basic classes. Your mage and warrior and all that, and that starts your starter deck, and then you play through and it's typical getting spells and items and things to fight bad monsters. I like that in that theme. It works great. Sword and Sorcery is a very generic fantasy game, which every time I tried to get it to the table, I just couldn't get past the entry point of the complexity of it based on the theme. However, Gloomhaven, that is a non-generic fantasy. And that is overwhelmingly complicated when you first start out. But I had no problem trying to get that to the table because the story there wasn't telling a generic fantasy story, even though it kind of was. It was telling it in a different world with different races and different things. It was still a fantasy story, but ultimately it was exploring this new world.
I think it also kept your attention because it is such a different mechanic. It's something new in the world of board games. I had so much buzz about it that you were, I think, willing to give it a little bit of leeway. Because I think that if it hadn't had so much buzz around it, if it wasn't such a big thing, after the first two times we tried to play that scenario and messed it up so bad, if it hadn't been like everyone else loves this, what are we doing wrong? We would have maybe given up.
Yeah, I think... You are right, though. The mechanics of that game, of Gloomhaven, are what kept me going back. I wanted to upgrade my characters, upgrade my hand. I want to figure out
how to play these characters together so that they can do these scenarios the way they're supposed to.
Yeah. The story, move forward. Yeah, quite honestly, the story and the generic fantasy of, or and the more non-generic fantasy of it, didn't actually play a significant role in my enjoyment of the game. The story was necessary. but really the mechanics of leveling up. And that might be what I look for in generic fantasy, is I love the feeling of leveling up my character. And when I look at something that's generic, I have a general understanding of what it is. So without beating generic fantasy to death, let's jump over to generic space for a minute. Because that, I think to your point, Kitty, when you look at something and it's fantasy space or horror or whatever, you can make some assumptions. If I'm looking at generic space, I'm going to be like, okay, there's going to be ship combat. There's probably going to be lasers and shields and missiles and stuff. There's probably going to be alien races that are good at being pilots and engineers and things like that. And most generic space games are going to have those elements. And if you like those elements, you are going to be drawn to space games, and you're going to be looking for those elements to be either more refined or potentially more elaborated on if you're looking for something that's more complex or something like that.
I think that it, like, of the generic space, like 4X is almost what I like. That's what I think. When I think generic space theme, I think this is probably a 4X game.
Yeah.
You know?
And it doesn't have to be, but typically your 4X games are in space.
Yes.
Although, like, Heroes of Land, Air, and Sea is a 4X game in a fantasy setting. It can be
thing.
Done. Right.
They say, like, look at this. It's a 4X game. It's not in space. If they're, like, almost advertising based on that, like, you got to think, oh, yeah, let's look at ourselves a little bit. That's kind of a stereotype that 4X, that's a space thing.
Yeah. So, Josh, how do you feel about space?
I mean, again, for early memories of really cool sci-fi things in pop culture, I've really enjoyed that theme growing up before board games. So I like the theme in general. I like sci-fi and space in general. I think it has a bad rep. I think it has, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but my perception is that in board gaming land, that there's not, like, you know, just having a space theme doesn't make it good. And I'm just like, oh, it's a bit chintzy and cheesy, having all these spacey stuff thrown in there. So again, it's kind of like when I see a theme, any generic theme, I don't sort of be like, oh yeah, I like sci-fi, I'm going to like this. I'm like still skeptical enough to be like, I need to really check whether this is going to be good or not. And so I approach all generic, including fantasy and sci-fi, with that in mind.
I think you hit on a good point there. Sci-fi or space type games tend to be even more difficult to get into the mainstream fantasy. Fantasy right now is sort of mainstream accepted. So, you know, the Lord of the Rings movies did a lot of, you know, getting an entire generation where fantasy was just awesome, right? Yeah. And commonplace. So if you put a fantasy game out there, people are like, oh yeah, I recognize that. That's like Lord of the Rings. You put a space game out there, we haven't really had an epic space, like, changing. Now, you have your Star Wars games, right? But again, that's sort of its own thing.
And Star Trek, those two. Yeah.
Yeah, but a generic space something. I guess the Expanse is the closest I can think of right now of kind of a generic space show. And that one's more like if an intrigue, mysteries in space type of thing.
Yeah.
So maybe that's one of the things when you look at space, a lot of people look at space and are like, nah, I'm writing this off. But the people who look at space like, oh, this is going to be a complicated game. I want this game. That's what generic space says to me.
I'm sort of challenging it a little bit just because, you know, there are plenty of, you know, deck builders, and other type dice rolling, maybe even Euros that are sort of spacey themed, like, you know, Terraforming Mars and that Star Trek.
I would put Mars as its own generic theme.
Oh, okay.
I would break it out of space.
I would say the last 2 years, you're right.
Yeah.
And Cthulhu.
All right.
Can we talk about Cthulhu?
We'll get there in a second.
Okay.
Seconds up. All right. Let's talk about Cthulhu.
So I feel like Mars was the last one and Cthulhu is becoming the new one. Maybe it's just they're concurrent. I don't know. But it's like the hot thing. It's like, oh, there is, I don't know what the first one for Cthulhu was, but for Mars, Terraforming Mars was huge. Everybody loved it. All of a sudden, oh, look, everything is a Mars game. There's Mars games coming out left, right, and center. And it's because, like, oh, you liked Terraforming Mars, you'll like my game, I'm going to make it a Mars game. Please buy it.
I think there's an element of popular culture seeping into, you know, it, and this always happens in any art form, but, you know, I'm a huge fan of Elon Musk and his, you know, SpaceX and his drive to colonize Mars. And I think a lot of young people who are following that have seen that. And then, you know, for me, when I first saw Terraforming Mars, I was like, oh, a board game based on the idea of colonizing Mars, like Elon Musk is promising he'll start to do in the next 20 years.
And the book The Martian and the movie yes. came out, and that was all, it was like a cultural thing. Yes. And the board game industry is not blind to popular culture.
Right.
So I think it definitely plays into that. And I think that Cthulhu is just blowing up. And the more that there is, the more that there is coming. And I'm not against Cthulhu games. I like some of them. I just think that it is going to be like having subway tile in your bathroom or an avocado green kitchen. You're going to be able to tell, like, oh, this came out this year because, or like between these years, like, oh, you got your kitchen from the 70s with your avocado green refrigerator. You know, you're going to look and be like, oh, this game came from, you know, 2015 to 2020 because it's a Cthulhu theme.
So I'm going to defend Cthulhu for just a minute. But
and I'll help a little bit.
And there needs to be a little bit of background because I was where
I think I bashed.
No, you didn't.
He hates Cthulhu.
Only in the impression that Cthulhu is a new thing. I think if you just look at the word Cthulhu right now, there's probably a lot of games with Cthulhu slapped at the title. But Lovecraftian horror games have existed since forever. Since right. You know, Betrayal on House of the Hill is a Lovecraftian horror game. Now, they don't mention...
How old is that game?
80s. Early wow. 80s, yeah. Okay. So, it was an old Avalon Hills game. And it's just kind of made it through. Fantasy Flight has... There's their Arkham Files line of games, which have existed for a decade. It started with Arkham Horror, the board game, then Eldritch Horror, the board game, Mansions of Madness, Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition.
It just feels a slightly more niche than the other ones we've talked about. You know, like it growing up, very prominent in my mind were fantasy and sci-fi things, and they were very somewhat mainstream in popular culture. I didn't grow up being like, oh yeah, those... sort of weird sort of
tentacle monsters.
Yeah, Victorian but slash steampunk slash tentacle monsters genre that I see loads of books and movies about. Like, I didn't have that growing up. Yeah. So I feel like it's more niche and it's growing. It's sort of now rivaling the sort of sci-fi and fantasy in a way that it didn't before.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Lovecraftian horror, that is 20s New England area horror. Right. Like, that's where Lovecraft stories basically took place.
Gotcha.
They're about 100 years old. They are certainly like a subculture where right. like of horror. Right. Not every, I'm like, I'm surprised at the number of people who I talk to every day who I mention Cthulhu to, and they have no idea what I'm talking about.
Right.
Like, that's still surprising. But you can't mention sci-fi or fantasy without people like, oh, exactly what exactly. that is. So you're right at the pop culture thing.
Right.
But in the board game world, it's sort of already kind of a niche audience, and most people in the board game world that have been playing for a little while are familiar with some kind of horror fantasy.
Right.
The thing with horror is they're typically not scary. And I was never really into horror board games at all. Like Mansions of Madness, Betrayal House.
You mean you say that? I mean, we played Mansions of Madness.
Oh, wasn't. Past tense.
Ah, okay.
This is, again...
Wasn't scary.
Examining... Saying, past. Yeah, examining, like, what makes me draw to these things. Because I was more where Kitty was, where it's like, okay, this is just overdone.
Right.
Which I don't necessarily disagree. It's what makes it a generic theme. But the more I got into the mythos of the Lovecraftian stories,
yeah.
the more the games started to pop out as exceptions in the category. Right. Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition is a fantastic game.
Right.
It doesn't mean that everything based on Lovecraft is a fantastic game, right. but that game is great and it incorporates the story really, really well. It is a generic trope right now,
right.
but the game still stands out using that. And the living card game, Arkham Horror Living Card Game, also stands out. Even though it's using that generic theme, it has so much of that theme. It pulls me in more than any other fantasy or sci-fi theme right now.
There's a real thread of like alternativeness in my mind when I think of sort of this genre, this sort of Cthulhu genre that we're talking about, because you know, for sci-fi and fantasy, like we mentioned, very mainstream, but for something about this always screams to me like weird, odd, kooky, scary in a way that sort of just straight horror, maybe more like creepy. This is more creepy than straight horror, is more like scary. And so it's got that real alternative edge to it. Like I think of people who are really into sort of alternative things, be it sort of, I don't know, steampunk costumes or like tattoos. I always kind of group this in with like a really cool, quirky style to it. Yeah. So maybe it has that going for it.
It's a niche subculture.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. What are we finding out, Kitty?
Sorry. I was trying to find the interest over time for Cthulhu on Google. And there is kind of a little
what's the time period so that you've
this
got
is
up?
From this 2004
is, yeah so for 2004 now. Interest so, over time 2004 started at 75 whatever that is
right
at 2010 it jumped up to 100 bumped down a little bit around 2013 back up at 2016 and now at 2017 it's back down to 75 so it's held
well this is how often it's Googled.
Right.
So now everyone who's interested knows what Cthulhu is.
Right.
And I think that, was there a South Park episode that called
there
up Cthulhu?
Probably was.
And I think that that's where that big spike in interest over time came. And I do think that, yeah, it's a theme that's been around in the board game industry for a long time. But I think that it has just become a generic theme recently.
Yeah. Well, I think you are Lovecraftian horror has become a generic theme. Actually, a lot of the board game tropes that we're talking about now have become generic in the past decade simply because there are so many games now
yes.
that you can start to make things generic. Like things start to become generic.
Yeah.
So Lovecraftian horror, we are going to do an entire episode on Arkham Horror.
We should.
The Fantasy Flight line, and Kitty's like super excited.
She's just not like, it's not my theme. It's fine.
It wasn't mine either, which is why I'm excited to get Kitty into this and see what she thinks.
Yeah, it wasn't my kind of theme either, but it's growing on me. Yeah.
I think that maybe because I was more aware of it earlier, I'm allowed to say that it wasn't my theme. I don't know. Like, it's not something new to me. My dad was super into Lovecraftian stuff. You know, before it was a generic theme, you know, my dad's a big reader and he loves kind of the horror of past. I don't know. He's really into all sorts of weird stuff.
Well, so I'm going to see if I can.
I grew up with Cthulhu. I don't know.
I'm taking the challenge because I also grew up knowing what Cthulhu was and adamantly saying, I don't like it. I don't like tentacle monsters. The art really puts me off. A lot of like the really grotesque monster-y things. Like it's not an art style that I like. But the stories themselves and more the modern stories, the Lovecraft stuff is 100 years old. That stuff's a little tricky to read. They're all short stories for the most part though. So you can read The Call of Cthulhu. It takes an hour to read. And Lovecraft only did one story on Cthulhu. That's it. Yes. 1 hour of one short story. 100 years later, this is like a generic trope now. Like, it's just kind of fascinating to follow that trend and seeing where that came from. But there's other aspects to these games, to horror-based games when done right, that are really fascinating to me, such as the impending doom. You're probably going to lose. Even the best outcome, you're still not coming out of it great. You may have saved the world, but you sacrificed yourself doing it. Those types of elements are really interesting to me right now.
I really like a very different kind of horror theme, which the game that we talked about on this week's Kickstarter episode, Misfortune Lane, falls into, which is kind of playing off the
movie
teen
monster.
Horror movie.
Yep.
And that's way more up my alley. I think it plays off of the kind of like stereotype of characters, the kind of like it doesn't take itself seriously.
Yeah, it's tongue-in-cheek horror.
Yeah, and I like that a lot better, yeah. Personally.
Which I don't think has been overdone, honestly. I mean, there are certainly the movie, B-movie monster type of genre that's out there. But that genre really hasn't been overdone. And there's no game that's like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing ever. If you like this genre, this is the game you should own. So there's plenty of room for it to grow there. There is one other horror that we need to talk about, though, and that's zombies.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of zombie stuff either.
I think it's just been so overplayed. And I think it's not just the board game industry, it's, once again, it's like the Mars thing. It's pop culture in general went like overboard in zombies. And I used to love zombies, and I still like the classics hold up. And that's kind of what I'm getting from this whole thing. It's like in every one of these generic genres, there are really good things. It's just hard to find them because there's so much frequently.
Yeah. I used to be a very anti-zombie, like I say, anything that's like gross, it's like not really my thing. And but the few zombie games that I've played, I've actually kind of enjoyed. Zombie Dice, it's a fine game. Now, zombies are just a slapped on theme. And it's not like a really thinky game, it's like a 5-minute game, but it's kind of a neat distraction. Zombicide, I played that. I did not like Zombicide. I played Zombicide Black Plague, which is a fantasy zombie game.
Zombicide, I feel like I've heard a lot about that. What kind of game is
it's,
that?
It's Cool Mini or Not. It's a cooperative game.
Right.
It's miniatures all over the place.
Okay.
You're basically one of six adventurers, so you always have six characters on the board.
Okay.
In the Zombicide one, that's modern era. So you have six characters on the board. You're trying to get some kind of goal. It's all scenario-based.
Right.
Zombies just keep coming at you, keep attacking, and you're just trying to fend them off. In Zombicide Black Plague, it is a fantasy version of zombies. I like fantasy. Zombies in fantasy feel completely different than modern-day zombies to me. The game mechanics I like better in Zombicide Black Plague, and I love that game. I still don't like modern-day Zombicide, but Black Plague is amazing. Like, I will play that game by myself. It's so good. I'll play all six characters. It's so... It was a trope where I'm like, I don't like zombie games. And if you look at my collection...
Dead of Winter?
Dead of Winter, the board game, the original one that we played, that one was not bad. Oh, wait, sorry. I was thinking Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead.
Yeah, Walking
Dead.
That
one's good.
The Walking Dead original board game, that was actually pretty good. Dead of Winter, I like the system.
I like that game a lot.
It's okay. I like Zombicide better, but Dead of Winter I will play, but I like Dead of Winter mostly because of the hidden role aspect of it.
Yes.
I like...
Which is the part I don't like about it, which is really funny. I really like a lot of the kind of press your luck search and trying to work together to survive.
And there are total options that, like, you just remove the traitor mechanics and you can play Dead of Winter straight, too. Like, you can do that. So, but those games are good games with a zombie theme.
Yes.
It's not the zombie theme that makes them good games.
But for a while there, I was really into zombies. I was with the popular culture. It was a big thing. So I picked up a few games, like The Walking Dead, the board game, that was a really good game that I wouldn't have bought if it weren't a Walking Dead game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but also
sometimes you find those gems like that.
I sort of feel like that comment's redundant because, I mean, we spoke about the fact that, like, of course the theme doesn't make the game, right? It's just there to, like, hook you in and have that initial interest. And then the rest is like, you know, is this actually a really good game? So, yeah, of course, you know, these zombie games aren't good just because they're zombie games.
Right. But they're not bad because they're zombie games. And I think that's really what I'm getting at is... Just because something has a generic theme doesn't make it a good or bad game.
Yes.
But it does give the entire community fodder to say, well, this game's just another zombie game. Which sometimes that's true.
Sure.
It's just hard to... I think it's harder to judge generic games based on their theme than it is other games. So games that are really unique, have new-looking art, have their own theme that they've put the thought into, you can... sort of judge them by that cover. Whereas with a generic theme, you really still don't know anything about the game except some very basic information, maybe.
Yep. Well, Mansions of Madness, for example, everyone was saying Mansions of Madness was a great game. I owned Mansions of Madness 2nd Edition because everyone said it was a great game. I'd never even opened it because of the theme. I was not interested in any kind of Lovecraftian horror game, but everyone said it was a great game. So I'm like, all right, eventually I'll get around to it. It wasn't until, I don't even know what it was exactly, that, actually it was the Living Card Game. I'm like, okay, I'm going to play the Living Card Game. I have to get past this. It's I know it's a good game here. So then I started reading the fiction that Fantasy Flight puts out, which are these little novellas for the Living Card Game. Once I started reading that, and started understanding the world more, I'm like, oh. And that tied directly in to the Living Card Game, which also ties directly into Mansions of Madness because they share the same world. And now these games are so compelling, I can't wait to play it again because I understand the world better. So I think I'm coming at it where it's like all these generic things, fantasy, sci-fi, zombie, Cthulhu, I didn't like them until I kind of let myself get invested in them. I was the hater without truly have gone through it.
I don't know, because I feel like you've always been like a fantasy lover of fantasy. Yeah. Yeah.
Fantasy, sci-fi,
you
yes.
Had your
but zombie
thing.
Cthulhu, right.
You had to be drawn into the theme, and then you turn into your normal self of, now I have to have everything in the theme.
Yeah. Now, we'll make a quick mention of Trading the Mediterranean, because I don't think any of us are super qualified to talk about this particular theme, because none of us have been pulled into it so much. The game that's not Cornucopia...
Concordia
is one of those types of games, and we really enjoyed playing it. And there's other games that are like these trading things that we enjoy playing, but the theme itself would never pull me into it, and it still probably puts me off of it. It's like generic medieval or trading Euro games still is just kind of puts me off from that. If I was to start doing some history, you know, studies, watch some Discovery Channel stuff on Trading the Mediterranean or Knights and Castles and stuff, that might change. But right now, to me, it's still just kind of a
paste it on theme. I think, you know, that you're not the audience. And that's the thing about all of these themes. Like, they all have their audience. And that's why they're being used, right? You know, anything you do in terms of art, you know, whether you're making a film, book, whatever, you know, you've got your audience, and you are going to appeal to those people. You know, if you try and appeal to everyone, then there's no one that's going to love it, right? Because it's just bland and so, like, you know, mass market that no one's really going to get into it. But if you focus on a really engaged audience, then you're much more likely to have those kind of evangelicists who will then go
fanatics
out. Yeah, fanatics who will go and like kind of spread the word to other people and bring people in. But you want that core audience.
Evangelist is the word you were looking
there
for.
There you go. And you know, you need that core strong audience instead of just like a large bland not engaged audience. And so I think these generic themes allow you to tap into that, where it's like, oh, I just love anything anime. You know, I see a box with anime on it, I'm gonna go over, pick it up and read the back and most likely buy it.
That's another good one.
So I think that the problem that these generic themes have encountered is kind of what Josh was just talking about in a way, is they've become so like, all right, so our target audience is a fantasy in like person who loves fantasy. So they're trying to hit all of the notes of someone who loves fantasy instead of making a good specific fantasy game. And so it becomes that kind of bland, boring, appealing to all fantasy lovers, yeah, because there's so much nuance within that community. So it has become a victim of its own success.
Yeah. And it's hard to be unique when you're in such a, like, fantasy is one of those things that's really hard to be unique in, because there's the tropes are so ingrained in everyone, where when you go away from those norms, you better be hitting it right on. Otherwise, people are like, this isn't what I wanted. This is,
yeah.
Now, we have some input on this one. So, generic theme can help communicate what the game is about. We've talked a little bit about this. Michael Gonzalez says, I love generic sci-fi and generic trading in the Mediterranean. I think having a common setting can help make new players of the game feel at home more quickly, but then the game should distinguish itself both thematically and mechanically as well. So basically, like, the plant race in Eclipse should not be the same plant races in Cosmic Encounter. Chris Anderson adds to that, they are already familiar to many gamers, so they can catch the eye of those who like those settings, which we kind of touched on. One of the things I think is really interesting, especially in the fantasy realm, and mostly specifically in generic fantasy, you can go with stereotypes and tropes without typically being offensive. So. Yeah. Racism in Dungeons and Dragons, orcs don't like, you know, or dwarves don't like elves, or whatever you want to do. If you were to do that in any
it's
other
an orc.
Setting,
kill it.
Exactly. You can't do that in other settings without basically triggering things. Now, I'm not saying that nobody's triggered by fantasy, and certainly the fantasy armor on women, they really need better armor.
Don't get me started on the faces that women miniatures make.
I'm not saying it's perfect, but I'm saying you can do a lot more in the fantasy realm in that you know, kind of like race wars type of thing that becomes not offensive. It's just, oh, this is what Tolkien, you know, Tolkien just created this world. It's what that world is. It's not our world. It's a different world. It's a different place.
Right.
So I think that that's interesting. Chris also mentioned similar designers can be built on established concepts in those settings, such as dwarves being miners and loving treasure, or wormholes being one way travel to, you know, a way to travel to long distances in space and stuff like that. So you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time. Let's see. Also, a good point is generic settings don't require licensing. You know, The Captain is Dead would have never worked as a Star Trek game. They would not have licensed that game. But you can follow that trope and all the tropes of Star Trek without calling it Star Trek. Call it a sci-fi game. And suddenly you feel like you're on a Star Trek bridge there. The captain died and you're trying to like fend off the Klingons. But at no point does any of that actually get said in the game, because we can kind of relate back to it. Non-generic themes can be off-putting to some. So, you know, a more generic theme might seem more accessible to a larger audience. For example, this is Chris again. He said, I won a game called Dalek Dice at an event. It's a fun little game, but I would have not have picked it up otherwise because I'm not a Doctor Who fan. So sometimes really specific games can put off fans. So maybe I do go non-generic in whatever space or whatever. That might actually be a detriment to it, where I'll just go generic. Yeah, some people are going to say, oh, that's just generic, whatever. But I'm still going to have a bigger audience, like you were talking about, Kitty. And one thing I think is interesting, Terra Mystica, which is a fantasy game, rebranded last year to Gaia Project, which is a space game. Both of them very generic in their fantasy and in their space. Almost exactly the same game. Almost. There's a few nuances and differences. But I think it's interesting that this same system has a generic fantasy and a generic space. So whatever you like, you can pick your game. All right. Do we have anything else?
I don't think so.
We're all good.
This was interesting. I don't know what I've come away with, though. I think that I still like generic fantasy. Generic sci-fi is okay. I'm much more into zombies and Cthulhu than I used to be.
I just stick by the fact that marketing plays a heavy role in this. I think that's a lot of the pressure in the industry to sell your games.
Yeah. And yeah, well, I don't know. Kitty, have I changed your mind about anything?
No.
Not that I was trying, but.
Not really.
All right. You're still, tropes are bad?
I am not tropes are bad. I am tropes are tropes, and they don't really tell you much.
Okay.
Is where I'm at. And yeah. I think that's where I started.
Sounds right.
All right. Well, if you agree with us or disagree with us, let us know. And we'll get smarter people than us to input on this.
No, we won't.
So last week we had our feedback episode and we drew a name for our feedback winner. But I also wanted to draw a name for all the people who had any input into that, any of those three topics. And all our Patreons as well. So basically what we're going to do is on the feedback episode, we'll have one drawing for all the people that send in feedback, and then we'll have another drawing for all the people who sent in input plus the Patreons. I didn't draw it last week because I forgot. So we did draw it after that episode, and we're announcing it here. So Melissa S. from the Board Game Geek, or from Board Game Geek, give us an email. Let us know if you want Cool Stuff Inc. or Amazon gift card. It's a $25 gift card. And thank you for your input. Your name came up from the Eurogames thread, but you've participated in many other threads too. So thank you for participating. All of the input is really, really important to us because we like to see what other people are thinking. So we're not just talking about nothing in a vacuum. let's see, a reminder, Essen in October, we'll be there. If you're going to be there, let us know. And by wheel, it's that Sydney and I. Gamehole Con, I think all three of us will be there.
Yeah.
And the events should be up by now, so check it out. Go to gameholecon.com, search for Tabletop Game Talk, and you should see all kinds of events. Also, the Game Designers movie, I just want to plug that again. So if that link will also be in the show notes. Some of the designers on there are Matt Leacock, Eric Lang, Ryan Lockett, Rob Davio, Isaac Childress, Jeremy Stegmeier, and lots of others that, like, just the preview on the website looks awesome. I might be more into game design than you guys, but I still like it. You can follow us at Facebook at /tabletopgametalk.com. Nope. You can follow us on Facebook at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. Twitter, Tabletop Game TLK. Kitty's at Lawful Good Mom. Josh is Josh's Blonde. I'm Game Master Chris. And if you want to support us via Patreon, tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon.
Tabletop Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening, and remember, we love your feedback, so email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com, and you'll be entered into a $25 gift card drawing on our next feedback episode.
Finally, a huge thank you to our Patreons.
Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, the SGC, Samir Biswas,
Jason Strong, Terrence Mittler, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl,
Ryan Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie Rudelieu,
Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien,
Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks,
Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra,
David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum,
Phil Swartzel, Jordan Livingston, Greg Kamai, Zoe Ng, Chad Covey,
Anne Reynolds, Eric Hoffman, Adrian Dong, Christopher Vincent, Nate,
Faz Flinham, Sean Peck, Toby Craft, Eric Solander, Adam Kribles, Mike Smith,
Christine Meyer, Trevor Davis, Wesley Trailer? Traylor? I'll work on it, Wesley. Tim Brunig, Chris Lowe, and Joe Hoover.
Until next week, keep playing games and having fun. Josh, you're leaving to Europe?
I'm going to the UK. My college friend is getting married.
Wait, so college friend, have you seen him since?
Her since? And it's... Oh, yeah, I've seen her a few times, of course. Yeah, I mean, I lived in London since college.
Yeah, but no, you lived in Thailand and then you moved to the US.
I did. Well, I have seen her since, and it will be good to catch up with her and all my other friends that will be going.
Well, I am jealous.
Crumpets will be eaten.